Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. I'm here with my sidekick and partner in crime, Tom Conway.
Hola.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, I should say bonjour, since it is Bastille Day.
It's Bastille Day. You stole my thunder.
Oh, I'm sorry. You should have never told me.
Hi, Tom. You are listening to Voice of Vashon on Vashon Island, 101.9 KBSH FM. I hope you can pull up a chair and join us. We're going to talk about some things today with regard to food and Vashon and kind of how we've been doing. I haven't seen you in a while, Tom. How are you?
I know. Good. Thank God this isn't a TV show. I just realized that my t-shirt is inside out.
Which, that's all right.
It's okay.
I do that occasionally.
And I'm wearing
too.
Socks with sandals, so
that.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you have to. So it's okay.
It's true.
It's really okay.
I'm secure enough in my sartorial confidence, yes.
Well, so what have you been doing all month?
Well, you know, my most recent food thing is my friend Mary Margaret. God bless her. She I knew about these things on the periphery, but she really introduced me to the Hostaberry, and most people are probably like doing that dog half ear thing going, rawr, rawr, what's a Hostaberry?
Is that an H-O?
No, it's more like maybe it's just the berry.
Oh, is it just the berry?
If I'm pretending I'm Antonio Banderas, perhaps just the berry. It's just a berry.
Oh,
no,
it's J.
Yeah, J-O-S-T-A.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Berry. Like, okay. Like Barry Gibb. Mm-hmm. Well, not like Barry Gibb. It's just B-E-R-R-Y. And Linda's looking at me like, we have an hour of this to go through. It's just stop it right now.
I'm so glad we're friends.
I am too. And I'm so glad you put up with me. Okay. So back to the Hostaberry.
Yeah.
So what's kind of cool about this thing is it's a hybrid between, someone came up with a good idea. They're related as plants, the currant and the gooseberry, and they crossed them and they came up with a Hostaberry. And so what's really nice is you have the sort of sharp tartness of the gooseberry, mm-hmm. and you have that sort of little sweet aftertaste of the currant, and it makes a really killer jam. It's high in pectin, so it makes really good sprightly jams.
I saw them and they look like they look like big huckleberries, kind of.
They do. They look like a very large currant or a opaque gooseberry.
Are they hard to pick?
No, they're really easy, which is another reason they're so great. Because if you've never picked a gooseberry, they're usually low to the ground.
They're not very fun to pick.
They basically are like a porcupine fish. You know, you come back with you come back looking like you're like a zombie with blood dripping from your forearms. So I went over and picked them with a friend of mine, and she had a bunch that a couple trees that were really big and. And then we got on ladders, which against my better judgment, and
I don't do ladders anymore.
I don't. That's what I said as I was up on one. I don't do ladders anymore because you know what happens.
Yeah.
And then I came home and strained them and made jelly. So that was my super. I hope I didn't upstage you with my exciting berry picking story.
Well,
what have you been doing?
Well. Not as much as you, I'll tell you. I had an incident over this last month. It happened a couple weeks ago, and I just kind of want to share with you and with the listeners what happened. And it's about the importance of drinking water and staying hydrated.
Ooh, this sounds serious.
Yeah, I was outdoors just sort of having a chat with a friend of mine. We were sitting on little chairs and in the shade, and we weren't drinking. We weren't doing anything untoward.
You were socially distant.
Socially distant, and she was telling me a story about a movie, and I wanted to see the movie, and all of a sudden, I couldn't see her. I couldn't hear her, and voices were far away, and I said, I got to go home. I don't feel good.
Was this a psychological reaction to the story itself?
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it? Like... No, I was very interested in this story, but I couldn't focus, you know?
Oh, okay.
That'd be a good thing to have in your back Wouldn't pocket, like, though, if you could just automatically
like
do it.
Yeah. Like a little...
But anyway, I couldn't get up. I could not get up off the chair without falling down. So I just sort of crawled to the ground and I lay there for a while. And she said, I think we should call 911. I said, no, I'm just lightheaded. It'll be fine. And then after a little while.
Which isn't that remarkable that you're sitting there and the next thing you're prone and you're looking at the sky and you're going like, oh, I'm just fine. I can't stand on my own body weight.
But I'm fine.
And I can't see you. But I really feel like this just is going to drift away at some point.
Oh, God, who else says that? It will soon disappear.
It'll just disappear.
Anyway, in the end, my friend convinced me that we had to call 911. So we did. And I can't say enough good things about Vashon Fire Department and their rescue people.
How cool is that?
Oh, man. They treated me wonderfully and made me feel better. But they made, well, they can't legally make me go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. But let me just say they were very convincing.
Did they show up like in calendars without shirts on? And
no, but I'm going to propose that we make that happen soon.
Just wonder.
they're very nice looking people. Anyway, so I spent the night in Swedish, and it was dehydration. And I realized the doctors kept asking me, what was I doing all day? And I just realized I did not drink water that day. I was just busy.
Did they know before did you have to spend the night because they couldn't figure it out?
No, they figured it out. The ambulance people figured it out.
Oh, okay.
They thought that's probably what it was, but they didn't know. And they thought, you know, what if it is heart?
Yeah.
And so
or
we went
stroke,
in,
or a mini stroke or something.
Yeah. So anyway, the lesson, the long and the short is drink water. And when I was in the hospital, I was talking to one of the doctors. There were wonderful women doctors there. And she said to me, how much water do you drink? And I said, well, I have 2 quarts of water in my fridge. And by the end of the day, those are gone. But the way that I drink them is I go to the fridge and glug, 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 you know, like a 16. I do a lot. I drink a lot. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, that's not the right way to drink water. And I said, what? She said, you know, think about it. When you drink copious amounts of water after not having had any for a couple hours, your body thinks it's a flood. And then you have to go pee right away, which is true. But if you're sipping water throughout the day, 2 or 3 times an hour, keep it with you, your body thinks, oh, it's moisture. And she said, just think about water to your body as oil to your engine.
Oh.
And it keeps it lubricated. It keeps you able to move. You can think. You can see.
you can stay standing.
It can be very dangerous. And I don't know if you remember or not, but in 1997, Jimmy Carter went to the hospital for dehydration, and he did a campaign about be sure to drink water. It was when he was building his houses and doing that kind of stuff for.
That's really an important. As I tease you about your near death experience,
it was not near death. Okay,
but it really is, and because I think that's what I do is I just gulp a big 8-ounce glass of water
because I'm thirsty.
Yeah, and then being a man. Teetering on seniorhood. Oh, wait, maybe I'm there. It's like the thing where I have conversations with myself, so I'm definitely there. And I'll say like, oh, really, Tom? You have to go to the bathroom again?
Again?
It's like that, you know. Yeah. So all you young ones, enjoy that period of your life where you're not, when you think of a trip to Europe, your first thought isn't like, I wonder where the bathrooms are.
On the airplane,
In Spain. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of, that was shocking. And now I've learned a lesson, a big lesson.
So what do you do differently then? Like, what's your regimen now?
Well, my regimen now is I keep water with me all the time, and I just drink it, you know, 3-4 times an hour.
So not as much.
I'm sipping as opposed to gulping.
Each time, but less each time, but more throughout
often.
The day. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's good.
So I should get an A+ on that now, which is good.
Yeah.
And and I was low on potassium. So that's a pretty bad thing. That's hard on your heart.
Can we go get some French fries? Would that help?
Potassium.
Yeah.
I think so. Potatoes.
Potatoes, baby.
Yeah.
Tater tots. I'll make you some tater tots.
Yeah. So, you know, in that regard, I that was the big issue for me. So then speaking about drinking, I also discovered, which people have been talking about for a long time, I just haven't been on the bandwagon, drinking vinegars. And I have been experimenting with one here. And it's a fig drinking vinegar, and you put 1 ounce of it in your cocktail glass with ice, fill it up with club soda.
Do you buy the drinking vinegar, or do you make it?
No, I buy it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Drinking vinegar. Do you know, I can't remember the name of it, but it's made locally.
Oh,
remember
Orlean.
The guy? Remember the guy down at the farmer's market?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know who you mean now. Oh, so it's at the farmer's market.
It was. Yeah.
I bet you can buy it on Vashon Fresh.
I think you can.
The VashonFresh.com people.
So anyway, that was an experiment, and now I've just learned to love that. It's sort of like a shrub, I guess.
Yeah, and what's really great about those is if people aren't familiar with them, a drinking vinegar or a shrub, they're basically a sweetened vinegar infused with...
It's a fruit thing.
With a heavy-duty dose of pure fruit juice or fruit syrup, and then usually you'll... drink it like a spritzer or just drink a little
bit.
That's
what I did.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I made a really good, I made one accidentally out of a crab apple. I pickled crab apples and I actually put a little bit too much sugar in it and the proportion was off as far as, the crab apples are okay, but the solution they were in was like awesome. It was like this tart apple, that you could
it'd really be good on pancakes.
Be good on pancakes, and it's good to just sort of put with spritzer with a spritzer,
yeah, or on ice cream, I bet.
Yeah,
yeah. Let's talk about what's going on in town.
Sure.
Have you discovered or thinking about anything new or anybody doing anything interesting?
You know, I'm always amazed how when I think about it, I moved to Vashon 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, I'm supposed to say I've lived here my entire life. That gives me more credibility.
Yeah, I don't believe what you say now.
I've been here 84 years. I was the one that filled in Maury and Vashon Island right in there
in
the Portage.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Where were we? Oh yeah, new. So I've been enjoying like how people have adapted to a time when we're socially isolating and the restaurants have come up with great takeout. I didn't mention this to you, but there's a really good one. A friend of mine was telling me about that Bramble House. They do like a wine bottle and then like a sampling of aperitifs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's like $25 for all of it. It's really great.
Oh, how
but,
nice.
My new favorite thing is, because it's just like grandma used to make, my Lebanese grandma, we have two fabulous food trucks with Syrian food.
Right.
And they're both different enough. That's really nice. It's like, you know, they're not a repeat of each other. They're very different. They're very different. And they're both really good.
Oh, I love both of them.
Yeah, I had kebabs yesterday.
Yesterday I had a wrap.
Oh, you went to one? You went to?
Yeah, I did.
Dang.
And I went on to the one on the north end.
By the library?
Yes.
Eids?
Eids.
I think Eids, yeah.
Eids. And the other one is it called Syrian Grill?
Syrian Kitchen,
I think. So it's in Courtyard Square.
Yeah, and I had a kebab meal.
Yeah,
it was really good.
That sounds really good. And any other things that interest you?
Oh, you know... Here's my other thing that when I used to work at when I was a sexy shop boy.
when was that?
Never. When I would wear my Urban Bloom apron and I was working at the flower shop. Next door was Anna Ranu's.
Oh yeah.
And I tell you, if you haven't been in there, because it's sort of like it's a lovely little resource of nibbles and food and meals and all sorts of things, but you wouldn't think that. You'd think it's just sort of like coffee or drinks or tea.
Little tea shop, yeah.
And they have very unique, and when I say unique, I say it in a, you know, like a lot of people go, oh, that's really unique.
That's
no,
different.
It's really good. It's good food. And, they make a killer egg salad. It's like
I didn't know that. I love
egg
salad.
It's so good. You just go in there. And it's funny because they have a run on them usually because people like them so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my other favorite. That was a discovery a couple years ago, but I want to let everybody know about their
egg
salad
sandwich.
Well,
and you have to go back. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if it was a couple years ago and it's still high on your list.
Still high on my list.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well.
How about you, Missy?
Well, mainly... Well, I'm addicted to Ruby Brink's burgers on Wednesdays.
Yeah, that's
now.
A good burger.
It's a really good burger. And you can buy the patties there and take them home and cook them if you'd like to do it on your own grill, if you want to.
Oh, wow.
You know, but I think they're doing some pretty wonderful things with takeout. And, you know, the last month I've kind of been out of it, so I haven't been out and about very much. I've been cooking a lot.
But, yeah, I saw some of your stuff on Facebook. killer chorizo breakfast, which was apparently breakfast for one.
It was breakfast for one, yeah. Well, you know, breakfast is always for one at my house.
And yet I live just a mile and a half away.
Well, I could call. I'll call next time I do that.
I get
that
up at 5 a.m.
I know you do. I know. Yeah, that's really good because you can. I can know that I can call you at 7:30 and it's not going to be... Exactly. I won't get chastised.
And you won't mock my inverted t-shirt.
No, no.
And not. Socks and sandals.
Maybe if it's twice in a row. Well, one thing that I noticed yesterday, July 13th, was Paul Prudhomme's birthday. And, you know, I really liked him. I liked him so much.
He was great.
He was great.
And he was one of the first when chefs became personalities.
He
really
was.
Emeril and Paul Prudhomme. And
he was so famous for his blackened catfish or blackened whatever fish.
He kind of put it on the map for most Americans.
He really did. He really did. But it was so popular when he did that they didn't have enough fish in the Gulf Coast. The whatever fish it was he used, I think.
Oh, they were having trouble. I think it was redfish.
I don't know, but it was one of the ones that he was saying was so good and telling people how to do it, and then they ran out. So
he should have said mullet. That would have been an endless supply.
But interestingly enough, it made me think about his sister Enola Prudhomme. You know,
that's a great name,
Enola
Prudhomme.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder if it has something to do with NOLA, you know, the...
Oh, I was thinking the Enola Gay.
Enola Gay, too. Yeah, woofed. But anyway, she was also a cook. She was a wonderful cook, and she wrote cookbooks called Low-Fat Cajun Cooking. And
is there even such a
there
thing?
There is, actually. I met her in Lafayette, Louisiana, where she had her little restaurant, and I spent the day in the kitchen with her once. And she was the cutest little thing, as tiny as she could be. I mean, compared to her brother, who was huge. And she said she just always watched him eating all that and cooking with all that fat, and she didn't like it. And so she wrote cookbooks the opposite of his. She used his dishes, and then she lowered the fat content in them. Yeah. And, you know, low-fat alligator is different.
Yes.
She says,
how do you deep fry a hush puppy? You know,
yeah.
That's funny because when he was a household name, and I used to do like my shenanigans in the kitchen. I would do my segment, of course, unfortunately, at his expense. I wasn't making fun of him. I just thought I was being so funny. And well, maybe that's making. I hope not. I was not. Anyway, I'm trying to make it sound like I wasn't a total, you know what, but
you weren't.
I wasn't. I would do my little, I had routines, you know, I was sort of an entertainer of sorts in my own house. So I would be there at the frying pan and I go, hey, this is my Paul Prudhomme and I just want to talk about how you're going to make some blackened fish. Now, first of all, we're going to get some bacon. This is my bad New Orleans thing. And we're going to get some bacon grease. Now, there's not enough bacon grease. You put in some butter. Now, if there's not enough butter, then I say maybe a little bit of oil just so it gets a glisten. And then you put in, and so of course I went in like.
And then you put in one onion.
One onion, exactly. And don't put any vegetables in here. Just
vegetables.
Forget about those vegetables.
Forget about it. Yeah, well, his sister was not that way, but it was an interesting time.
Yeah, it was fun because he was full on fat and everything.
I really liked him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was full on fat.
Make a roux, baby.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that reminds me of a cookbook that I bought in New Orleans, and it's called Who's Your Mama? Are You Catholic? And Can You Make a Roux?
I love it.
It's a wonderful cookbook, and it's very old Southern recipes that are in it.
You know, there's a funny saying. I've been watching on... I know we usually talk about people online that we were following, but this is sort of just a preview of... So I've been listening to Leslie Jordan, who was a character on TV called Beverly Leslie, who was a rich Southern man who was rich because he married a rich woman from the North, you know, a socialite from New York City.
Oh yeah, how lucky for him.
And so his character is he's hysterical, but then when you see him on life, on he does his Instagram post, Leslie Jordan, and he's hysterical in general. Like I think he could just recite the ingredients on your Clorox bottle
and
you'd laugh. So, but one of the things he said last week, I really did spit my coffee out because I was watching him and listening to him. And it was when one of the things his mother would say to him when he was pouting And she'd look at him and she'd go, Leslie Jordan, she goes, if your lips get any bigger, I could paint the Lord's Prayer on them with a mop.
Because he's pouting.
Because he's pouting. Oh, and baby. I thought that was one of the funniest lines I've ever heard.
It is. Well, you know, I want to talk about picnics. Have you been on a picnic lately?
You know, I haven't. And there was a time a couple of years ago where we really got into a really good cycle.
A routine
with friends of mine. There was just sort of this, we're an odd assortment of people.
Anyway.
Yeah. And we just sort of have this sort of casual round tree or phone tree or text tree. And somebody would say, hey, I'm going to be at Maury Island Overlook. Let's go Wednesday. Let's have dinner. Whatever, we're not planning this. Whatever in your fridge, bring it.
Bring it. Yeah.
What you want to get rid of. And it would be really great.
We had some interesting food, I bet.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite combos was we had cold pizza, spring rolls, potato salad, and s'mores that were not cooked. They were like cold.
Oh, that's
we
lovely.
We had graham crackers
Yum.
And marshmallows. And, yeah,
yummy,
but it was
yummy.
Still good.
Well, you know, in this time of coronavirus and, you know, being, I don't know.
Locked in your house.
Yeah. And some people aren't comfortable going out to dinner, you know, even in safety, they're just not. So I was thinking picnics are just such a wonderful idea. You can do it potluck.
Mm-hmm.
You can call your friend and say, I'm coming over, I'm bringing the chicken, you know, or come to my house.
And eat outside.
Eat outside, so you're safely distanced from each other.
And then you don't have to clean your house.
There's no cleaning.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
My kitchen can remain the way it's always been.
Yeah.
Messy.
Well, so I was thinking about picnics, and I was thinking when did people decide there was that name? I mean, when did it become a picnic? Because people have been eating outdoors forever and forever, especially the working class, you know, the farmers and the laborers. And so one of my favorite picnic lunches is a plowman's lunch. Mm. And a plowman's lunch, do you know what that is?
I think I do, but I would love to hear, you know, because I know you're a really good food historian and you have what the actual facts and don't make them up
some people do.
Yeah.
No, so it's really interesting because plowman's lunch is a term that was first referred to in literature, and it's old English literature, and I can't say it. You know, it's that language I can't speak. In the 1600s. And there's a poem about it and there's some literature about plowman's lunch. Well, then you don't hear anything about it for centuries. And in 1957, the English have claimed that they invented the plowman's lunch because it was from the cheese marketing group in England, and they wanted to market their cheeses for lunch.
So I'm sorry, what year was that?
1957.
Just not that long ago.
Yeah, when you were a boy.
When I went, excuse me, I was going to say it doesn't help when I go, that's when I was born.
Yeah,
there you go.
You were a boy when you were born, yeah. So, anyway, the plowman's lunch has taken many, many different forms over the years. The Australians say they invented it, and the English say they invented it in 1957, and then you have the old literature. But basically what it is cheese, bread, meat, and maybe a pickle. And the pickle could be a relish or like Branston pickle from England, which I adore. It could be an onion.
Mm.
And, you know, if it was a plowman's lunch Irish style, it was a potato.
Yeah. What was usually the meat like? Was it
be like a hunk of beef or a hunk of lamb or, you know, something they had left over.
Room temperature.
Yeah. And the reason they called it a plowman's lunch was that they would wrap it up in a kerchief so that the plowman could hang it on his plow when the horse, you know, the horses are pulling the plow, or he's pulling it himself. I don't know, back then. And he could just sit down and eat, and it was right there, and it was good, and it was healthy. Sometimes they put, of course, the Scots put a Scotch egg in theirs.
Oh, yeah.
And the Irish do it a little bit different. But there's a plowman's lunch really is a picnic.
Huh.
It's, you know, like a basic picnic.
That really would be, that would be a really interesting sort of show for us to do sometime. It's basically people's lunches around the world, like
what do they eat?
Because when you're talking about like at least the different UK cultures and Ireland, and the plowman's lunch, it made me think of a show I watched. I think it was a segment on 60 Minutes once about in India. It's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen, and I still don't know how it works. I don't think anybody does. But it's like all these. There's like all these sort of basically independent contractors who deliver mm-hmm. meals, and some of them. It's just amazing. Like they'll have these huge kitchens, or they'll have home cooks that do it, and then they do. They basically deliver it. They get their utensils to them. They get them back mm-hmm. the next day. They get them for.
It's quite a system.
It's a crazy thing.
Yeah, and they've got the stainless steel things stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's pretty wonderful. Well, ideas for picnics for people. You know, there's mm-hmm. so much you could do. The potluck picnic, like you were talking about. Let's clean out the fridge, or you can do.
Yeah, I call that the no pressure picnic.
That is no pressure picnic. Or you know, it used to be when we went on picnics, it was somebody had to fry chicken and somebody had to make potato salad and somebody else made a chocolate cake and you know we had all of those fixings. But now, I've gone just by the water with a friend and a sandwich, and we call that a picnic. You know, mm-hmm. because we're eating outside. It's al fresco. We're distanced from each other, but it's really lovely. It's a good way to feel like you've had some social life, you've done something a little different, you're out of your kitchen.
And sometimes it's really hard to pry yourself out of your house.
It's really hard sometimes.
An interesting conundrum. I mean, I process this on a daily basis, like some of my behavior. I go, why am I doing this? Or why am I not doing this?
Because you're old and alone.
I'm old, sad, and alone. And no. It's for instance, like when I was outside doing something, and I was out in my front of the orchard, and I was picking cherries off my the sour mm-hmm. cherry tree, but it took me forever to do it, to get out there and do it.
To make yourself do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
So, you just go like, why did it take me? Not like I walk my butt down the stairs into the orchard. And got a ladder and start picking. And,
yeah, I know. Well, it's the same thing with making a picnic or making a sandwich at home to take outside. I highly advise a Plowman's lunch and a big cold beer, because they usually had beer with it or hard cider.
Can I substitute hard cider, please?
Hard cider, sure, because that was part of it, too.
Yeah.
But did you know? Oh, wait. I want to go back to Bastille Day.
Oh, sure.
Because I had an idea about Bastille Day picnic.
Ah,
because that's today. So what if you got a baguette and you made a salad niçoise and you put it in a baguette? It would be so good.
Oh, yeah.
It would be so good. And then,
why don't you tell people? People might not be aware of what is in a salad niçoise.
Oh, well, I use tuna from Spain or Italy in olive oil if I don't use fresh. Or I use fresh tuna on the grill, but I don't usually do that.
I usually fly to the Azores and catch it myself.
Oh, well, of course you do. But I like the other tuna, the flavor's better, I think, than Sunkissed or Bumblebee.
No, I totally get it.
Totally different deal.
One of my buddies, John, who's was in his early life a fisherman, mm-hmm. a commercial fisherman, and he was helping me do some work on my house one time, and mm-hmm. and I made us tuna sandwiches, and he said, "What the hell is this?" And I go, "It's a tuna fish sandwich." Yeah. He goes, "It is not." He goes, "I don't eat that blankety blank blank." Yeah. I go, "Well, then you're not having lunch." But he went into went on to tell me the difference between like crappy, you know, canned tuna mm-hmm. and good canned tuna.
Can I tell you a little factoid?
Yes.
So I interviewed a scientist at the Oregon University. Their seafood university. It's part of the Oregon
Part of like an extension.
OSU, and they're doing research on the fish in the North Waters. And he had been doing it for years. And he said, only buy Northwest tuna. Only buy tuna that comes from Alaska down to the southern part of Oregon. Because, number one, the tuna that's in Indonesia and, you know, Thailand and those mm-hmm. places grows in warm water. And it grows, they're huge. They're huge animals in the water, and they absorb a lot of the chemicals and the mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And he said in the northern waters there's virtually no mercury in the tuna. That was several years ago. I don't know if that's changed, but it really changed my mind about buying inexpensive tuna.
And so do they usually show the sourcing on the
they do on the
label?
Can, yeah, it says product of Thailand or product mm-hmm. of something else.
Good as cat food or
you might like this as cat food. But anyway, back to the salad niçoise.
Oh yeah, we
You could put it's eggs, it's a hard-boiled egg, it's green beans, it's what else is it?
Tomato.
And a no.
No tomatoes?
No, green beans. Yeah, oh. There's tomatoes in it.
Okay.
And then you just dress it in a vinaigrette and the tuna.
Mm.
So you could have little slices of potato and little slices of beans.
Do you usually have croutons in a salad niçoise? I'm trying to remember. No.
No, because the salad niçoise comes on a platter. It's like a composed salad.
That's true.
But you could compose it on your sandwich.
Okay.
You can do that. I think that would be good. Or how about camembert and ham, you know, for French, mm-hmm. for Bastille Day. Maybe a little bottle of Sauvignon Blanc, something like that.
Yeah, and you could even go lowbrow and just get, you know, cook a couple hot dogs or a kielbasa ahead of time and put it on a...
But that's not French. I'm talking Bastille
Day. Oh, you're doing
Day.
French. I'm sorry. Well, wait
what
a
about croque monsieur?
Yeah, well, maybe I was talking about like the border of Germany and France.
You were talking Alsace.
I was. Yeah. I was so
Alsatian. So anyway, also, did you know that... In the olden days, like in Victorian days uh-huh. on the East Coast, which was very cultured and highly, they thought.
Of the United States?
Yes, uh-huh. of the United States. People used to picnic in the graveyards in Victorian days. And if you look it up on the web, Victorian graveyard picnic or something like that, eating in the graveyard, something like that, all this stuff comes up. And I wrote an article several years ago about it.
Stuff comes up.
Oops.
Oh, grandma, get her arm back in the ground.
Oops. Coffin's open.
Oops, no. Daisy.
So anyway, I did a lot of research on it a few years ago, and there's a whole revival now in some of the abandoned graveyards that are all overgrown and you know, neglected for mm-hmm. 100 years. And people have banded together and started fundraising for these places, and they're restoring them. And one of the things they do is have fundraising picnics in the graveyard. And the reason that people did that in the Victorian days is the graveyards were beautiful with gorgeous sculptures, and they had fancy gardeners and landscaping. Mm-hmm. But we didn't, in those days, have city parks. They weren't there. So mm-hmm. people didn't go to the park. They went to the graveyard. And there's so much legend and lore around that. And so I don't know. I think we should have a picnic at the graveyard.
Hmm.
You know, yeah. I mean, that's kind of like Day of the Dead. They do that.
Well, you know, I do.
They do practice eating with the deceased all over the world in different cultures.
That's true.
In different ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just some tea leaves or mm-hmm. something like that scattered on the grave. Or in Mongolia, they drink yak butter tea around somebody's grave. It doesn't sound too delicious, but
we usually do that Thursday nights at Sporties.
Plug for Sporties. I like their pancakes.
I like their yak butter margaritas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I know, I'm throwing out some ideas because it's something
really
different.
Good.
You know, it's different. And
because you do get into a rut. I mean, like I probably like my five meals that I make. And for a picnic, that's a great idea. I think even when we were, you know, I think the easiest one was just when we were kids and we lived in South Carolina. We lived about 2 miles from the beach. And my mom, it was really a good ploy. That was when you're a kid and you mm-hmm. listen to your parents. And she would go, well, we can't go to the beach until we get all our chores done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we would have to do our chores.
And then go on a picnic.
And then we'd go on a picnic. We could get on our bikes and we'd ride to the beach.
How
and
fun.
And
what a nice
peanut
memory.
Butter. Yeah, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah, maybe some chips.
And a banana and chips. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you could also take ribs on a picnic.
I love ribs.
And I want you to tell our friends out there about your easy peasy ribs.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, I cannot take credit for these ribs. I was over at my friend Carol Merriam's, who's a lovely island artist.
Is she?
She is. She's a wonderful human being. She is, and a big animal lover. And she paints some. In fact, she paints people's pets on canvas.
Oh, okay.
And she also makes jewelry. And so anyway, but she invited me over, and I had a lovely evening with her, and plus I was like a woman that can meet me toe to toe with eating ribs, you know, and
yeah,
and she can, so that was great. And I said, God, these are so good, and they were sort of unadorned. There mm-hmm. weren't, there's no sauce on them, there wasn't anything, but they just were really good. And she goes, oh yeah. I said, is there a recipe? She goes, it's not really a recipe, it's just how our family did them. And I go, well, what is it? And it sounds so silly and simple, but it's so good. It's just a rack of like baby back ribs. Mm-hmm. And then you just get garlic salt. And I was getting the kind that's like a natural sea salt and just dried garlic in it. And you just, you know, rub it on both sides, put it in the oven, uncovered.
Do you not let it sit for overnight or anything? Or
no.
You just do it and put it in?
I just did it that way. And I put
and
it
what
in
temperature?
350, not even high, just
for
350.
How long?
She says an hour and a half. And that works.
And then you shut the oven off?
Just shut the oven off and let it go down to room temperature. And it's just sort of that, I kind of grunt like a caveman when I eat
that garlicky, salty,
exactly.
meaty, bony thing.
I have flashbacks to my cave.
Yeah,
uh-huh, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, it's really good.
I make good ribs, but I've never done that before. You know, we talked one time about doing, I don't know, we need some more emails. We need people to send us some emails. We've got one here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this is from...
Maybe we need a Facebook page, Stirring the Pot Facebook page. And they could.
There is one.
What? Tom. I'm sorry. I just noticed that there was just the Linda Nygaard Stirring the Pot poster. So I didn't know that I even had an opinion here.
Oh, of course you do.
I'm a little sensitive.
We'll probably change the
okay,
name.
Okay, thank you. Jeez.
Well, we already talked about that. But
did
we'll
we?
Yeah,
okay.
You said no. So.
Oh, I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
So, that's right. I don't need
you don't need top billing.
I don't need top billing.
We'll give it to you, Tom.
No, no, I don't want it.
Okay, so the question is, this is a new baker, and she says, please tell me the differences in the flours we find. I'm confused. There's all-purpose, there's bread flour, there's cake flour, there's gluten-free flour. Talk to me about that.
Ah.
So...
Well, you use cake flour for cakes. You use bread flour for
but
bread.
What is the difference, really? Like, can I use all-purpose flour for everything? Pretty much.
Yeah.
But it does give you a different result.
Right. It's kind of like if you want to step your game up a little bit on
right.
certain things. Like, and it actually, in a lot of cases, makes your task of baking easy. Your results are...
Well, your outcomes are better.
They're better.
If you use the right...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like bread flour has a higher gluten.
Right.
And so it creates a stronger structure in the dough.
What do you use for your pie crust?
I use a pastry flour.
Do you?
Yeah. And so I use a... pastry flour. I used to use all-purpose, and it was good. But pastry flour, for some reason, I just liked... It created a little bit more flakiness and lightness, but... it was just...
Yeah, and the same with cake flour.
Kind of wafery almost.
Cake flour
almost.
Makes a big difference, too. Well, one of the questions she asked is, tell me about self-rising flour. And I don't really use self-rising flour, but I know that it's there, and people say, what makes it self-rising?
It's really popular in British cooking.
It is. In British cooking, they like it. Well, if a recipe calls for self-rising flour, you can make your own easily. You take a cup of flour. And you add 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder to that cup with 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
Oh, nice.
And voila.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, can you repeat it again, please?
Yes.
What is it?
A cup of flour.
Okay.
It's all-purpose flour. Just
not a pound,
but
a cup.
A cup.
Okay, per cup.
So you're putting 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder.
Okay.
And 1/2 teaspoon of salt.
Okay.
And that's for a cup. Now, I don't know.
But no baking soda in there.
No.
Okay.
Just powder. So, because that reacts with the salt. To make it rise.
Okay.
You don't need the other. So I don't know if you were making 10 cups, if you would.
Right. If the proportions
would
remain the same.
The proportions are going to be different.
Yeah. That's what's great about the mighty magic web.
Yeah. Because you'll get too much salt.
Yeah,
if you put 1/2 teaspoon in every
exactly.
cup, you'll get way too much salt. But anyway, that was her question. And if you listeners out there have any questions. Tom knows everything, so he can
Tom
he can
acts
answer.
Like he knows everything. No, you know, what's really good is I know everything. Never mind.
Well, you know, one thing that, let's see. Oh, I know what. Let's talk about gardening right now. And what's in the gardens right now? What's fresh and lovely and beautiful?
Oh, you know, I tell you what. There's so many great reasons to live in the Northwest, and there are so many equally great reasons to live on Vashon Island.
Oh, man, we can...
And the farm stands are just like the best they've ever been on the island. They really are. Lived here, there are so many new farmers and
plus they're being more creative about the things they're offering.
Yeah.
And the way they offer them, the packaging, the way they look at things differently now because we're a different community than we
were. Right. And I think there's also a lot of the farms are, you know, they're really hitting their stride. There, there are some that have been here for quite a while now and they got it down.
Yeah,
you know,
they do.
And,
they do.
But
you have raspberries.
Oh, raspberries. Yeah, I've been picking raspberries. And the variety I like that I have in my garden, I have two varieties, Tula Magic and Tula Mean.
T-U-L-A?
T-U-L-I. Tula Magic. Tula Magic? Tula Magic. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
But Tula Mean is the parent, and this is a hybrid. And you get two crops out of Tula Magic, two smaller crops.
Oh, you do.
But Tula Mean, you get one big old crop. And I think I kind of like one big old crop.
Yeah. Get it over with.
They're about, because sometimes the later crop, we have bad weather and they mold the berries.
Oh.
So this, with the singular crop, with a Tula Mean, you're getting them all in July.
And so is this a lot of jam?
It's a lot of jam, but you know what? I sometimes the jam gods aren't with you. I thought I could do it. I usually get away with it. I made a double batch at the same time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the same thing. Yeah. I doubled the batch.
I did a double batch at different times.
Yeah, exactly. I'm an idiot. Okay. I'm an idiot. I make jam. I don't know what. I doubled the batch and, it's really sort of sometimes it's hard to understand why the natural pectins in the fruit don't act accordingly. And so now I've kind of remarketed my raspberry jam on this batch.
Yeah.
I'm calling it Raspberry Joy.
Uh-huh.
After a friend of mine named Joy because she liked it. And it's a sort of a sauce.
Well,
you put it in yogurt, ice cream.
You can put it on your pancakes.
Pancakes. I mean, it's killer.
I got pancakes on the mind today, I think.
I know.
I like that.
We should make, you know, do you want me to make you some when you come over?
Yeah, that'll be good.
Do you like
blueberries?
Oh, okay.
No bananas.
Oh, God.
Oh, I don't
finish,
like any
man.
Kind of cooked banana. Look.
You know, I can't continue the show.
Okay.
I'm storming out.
I know.
No, you don't like banana pecan or any of that? Oh, okay. Well, my friend Rachel is bringing over. See, I have blueberry trees.
Yeah.
Or bushes, I should say. But I need to rethink how I do them because the birds get them every year.
Mm-hmm.
And she's smarter. She has hers netted. And she's going to bring me over some. So I'll freeze them so we can do
blueberry pancakes.
Yeah. Wait a second. Yeah. Blueberry sourdough pancakes, sister.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Oh, and Susan McCabe, if she's good, she can come too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll bring some real maple syrup.
Oh, my God. That's like a good $30 investment. Thank you.
Well, not quite. But
$25.
It's a lot, but you can't have nasty
stuff. No. Excuse me. Do you think I have Mrs. Butterworth?
Yeah, that was kind of an insult, wasn't it?
I don't even know I'm sitting at this desk.
Stop it. You know, let's talk a little bit about what's on the web with food. Is there any kind of new thing that...
Oh, yeah. That's one of the best things about Instagram, I think. Like, Facebook is sort of dead to me in a lot of ways, like, because it's so...
It's kind of boring.
And it's so polarizing and so political. And somebody posts like, hey, I heard this rumor that's true from my doctor's janitor who was read a paper on the desk of a, you know, and you're going like, okay, just stop it. So I'm kind of, but Instagram is great because you're taking the picture, you're
and it's a little story.
Yeah. And it's basically about what your interests are and your hobbies.
Yeah.
Or are actually about 72% of them are people smiling into a camera. But once you get through, once you do a search for, you know, like the cooking
is that
ones.
Where your pasta queen is?
That's where my pasta queen is. I just love her. It's a Instagram account called The Pasta Queen, and she's from she and her brother.
She's hilarious.
She is totally overly dramatic.
In an Italian way.
In an Italian, wonderful Italian. Like she takes what she thinks being a Roman is or an Italian, and she pumps it up a little. And she starts off and she goes, hello, welcome to the pasta queen. And then she goes, and then she looks in the camera and she goes, just every time she does it, she goes, ingredients.
And she flips her hair.
And then but what's so great about it is it's usually just a minute because it's a video on Instagram, which is usually your limitation. And she shows you how to do a pasta dish in a minute in such a succinct and really well planned out way.
I loved her episode on carbonara.
It was great.
It was just so, she made it look so easy, and really carbonara can mess you up.
Yeah, and then and she tells you what you need to do without sort of like doing that preachy thing. She goes like, and then when you put the pasta water in, it creates a creamy egg base.
It's a cream.
And doesn't curdle because you don't have it so hot, you know, and she
does capit.
Capit. And then her brother's in the background making fun of her. It's you know, and just as a reminder, Linda and I both live alone, so this is very entertaining.
Well, I think it's interesting, though. You know, there's so much we can learn now from all over the world, things that we didn't know. And carbonara is something that people think they can make.
Yeah.
And they can't.
No, no. And it's really fun to watch, like, how she does, just how to make a homemade pasta.
Yeah. Yeah,
the pasta
I really
itself.
Enjoy her. So everybody, she's called what now?
The pasta queen.
The pasta queen.
Yeah,
yeah. You know,
she has the best stove in the I don't know where that stove came from. It's like this blue enamel brass lined.
Money.
It's exactly.
You know, at this time of year. So it's July. We're going to have really a lot of bounty through August. But it's time to start thinking about what's going to happen in the autumn and what's going to happen in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about the time of year that I start thinking about Rumtopf.
Oh, it's a Rumtopf. You know, I can't get away without doing stupid accents today.
Oh, and my God.
And if it's really annoying, don't tell me. It'll hurt my feelings.
Okay. I won't hurt your feelings. Let me just say, I won't hurt your feelings.
I'm really fragile. I'm fragile. Because remember, I live alone.
I know.
I have a dog.
I have a cat.
Rumtopf. And do you know what? There's another name for Rumtopf?
Bachelor's Jam.
Oh, you stole my thunder this time.
Yeah, there's a different name, too, though.
It's called Old Officer's Jam.
Old Officer's Jam, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
why don't you tell us what Rumtopf is?
Well, it's an easy way to have some fruit and some liquor. And it's
liquor? I don't even like her.
Tom.
I'm sorry. Okay. I just had, you know, it was a reflex, a reflex from my sophomoric years and college.
Yeah, well. Okay. So Rumtopf basically means rum pot. That's
what the
word means. And there are special Rumtopf pots that some people keep sitting on the counter all year long, and they just keep adding. So it's a mixture of whatever fruit you have. Like right now, it would be some berries, probably. And then you put some sugar on that. And then if you're in Germany, you put rum on it. If you're,
What about Fwance?
Oh, and the American colonists used hard cider.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they brought the practice from Germany over.
Oh.
But they didn't have, you know, there wasn't rum.
That's interesting.
So they used cider, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
And then
you probably have to put a little more sugar in that because it didn't have as much alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm just thinking about the science behind it.
Oh, well, of course you are.
I'm like a scientist.
And then it's always drunk around Christmas time. It's like a festive thing, but some people drink it all year round.
Do you know why they called it Bachelor's Jam or Old Officer's Jam?
No, I don't. Do you?
Yeah, I do. It's because it's really, I got it. I didn't realize they were the same thing. And then when I was doing some research on it, because I did a blog post on it once, and it was really hysterical because they started calling it that because what would happen is like pensioners in the British Isles or old soldiers, it would become a thing that they would have readily available. They'd have it on their counter. It'd be in a crock. And as you said, as the season progressed, you would go like, it'd start with the earliest things like strawberries. Then you'd put sugar and liquor in it. And then it'd be raspberry sugar and liquor. And then it would be maybe plums and sugar and liquor. And so what happens is that the fruit, it's really odd because when I made it, the same thing happened. The jam part is the fruit that really sort of turns into these ugly little.
They're not
attractive,
no.
But they're not moldy or anything. They're just like mummy.
They're just ugly.
They're just ugly. They're all the same. Yeah. They take the strongest color of the strongest dyed fruit, so like a raspberry, and then. But then when you eat them, it's kind of like the alcohol is concentrated.
It's sort of like those little chocolate things yes! with alcohol.
Oh,
in
that's
them,
a perfect.
You know?
That's it's a like perfect that. Example. Yeah. Yeah, you bite into them, and it's like you can't decide if it's medicine-y or liquor-y or what.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting taste.
It is, and I think it's not a bad one. And,
no, it isn't.
But after a couple strawberries or a half a plum or two, you're like
half looped.
You're exactly. You're doing the bossa nova on your dining room table.
Well, people eat it in lots of different ways.
So why old bachelors, old officers, you know, you're, again, living alone at home.
Gumming it. Sorry.
Boozy, but getting your fruit.
But I found a recipe that uses all plums. And it's just plum.
Is that Blumkopf?
Blumkopf.
Yeah. Really?
And then I found a recipe. I don't know about how this one sounds. How about apricot?
Oh, yeah.
Pineapple.
Oh,
star anise. And gin.
That is from someone's weirdo blog. That's like somebody who needed to do a blog post that was like, oh.
No. It's not.
Really?
I don't know
was
where
it
I
a
got
reputable
it,
chef?
Yeah. Yeah. And
I know.
You know, playing around. No. I just, or then if you get closer to the fall, you can put in some apples or some pears.
Yeah.
Right now, you can put in some peaches, I think.
No, the peaches would be killer.
So I'm shopping now for a Roomtopf thing.
Oh.
You know, do you know those old cigar jars that have lids on them?
Yeah.
I think that might work too, except that it's clear.
Well, I'm in case you're in
you're
the studio, I'm making a big old face. You know, I think they usually have some sort of weird early linoleum malleamine lid that would poison you.
Oh, not this one. It's all glass.
Oh, it is.
It's all glass. Yeah. Ooh, it's like purple glass from the 1800s.
Okay. Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. I thought it had a weird lid.
No. But my question to you is, since you've made it and I haven't for a long time.
And you can put the fruit in cakes, by the way.
Well, yes, or on cakes when you serve the cakes. Or you put it in a bowl and put some cream on it.
Oui.
Yeah. Do you have to seal the jar when you're making Roomtopf, or is a lid that sits on top enough?
Oh, no, the air is fine.
You want the air.
Yeah, you're not sealing it, because you have to, the whole point is that you can take from it and add to it. Like, it's almost like a sourdough starter sort of idea. You're just adding to it, except it doesn't grow, and when it does grow, you just eat it.
Yeah, as
a little compote.
Yeah.
On those cold winter nights, watching Netflix.
Well, you
Netflix.
Make yours, and I'll make mine, and then we'll compare notes in December.
Oh,
and see what happens.
That'd be good.
Because I'd really like to do that.
And what fruits? Do you have any fruits you'd go? I wouldn't put in there.
Pineapple,
banana.
Banana never.
Wouldn't do that. I would do like stone fruits.
What about figs?
Or berries? The only thing about
figs
is they would be okay, but they're going to kind of disintegrate. They're not a tough, you know, like the tougher.
They're ugly enough to start with.
They are. Yeah.
I mean, they're beautiful and I love them, but.
It might be one of those things where you end up straining the fruit out of it anyway. And
I think I like the idea of doing the berries and it's a colorful thing that you put together and it stays in layers.
Yes.
In the jar. Uh-huh. So that's one reason for having a glass jar.
Right.
But I saw Roomtopf jars online at Etsy for, $1,000.
Oh, yeah. They're quite a collector. It's like they're cider pitchers, the same way like early American cider pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, so, we're going to start some Roomtopf because it's time. And I know.
And can we talk German when we talk about it next time?
German? So, what's on the grocery shelf that makes you happy these days?
Oh, yeah. We have this is our little segment.
What are we calling this? On the grocery shelf.
On the grocery shelf.
We're pretty smart.
We could do it. What are you buying? Yeah. Because I think it's fun to have it'd be fun to have a little segment each week, every time. As we develop the show
and we're still developing
little segments, we thought it'd be fun to talk about ingredients we like. Because, you go to the store and a lot of times, you learn about something someone uses, and you go like, really? That's good? And I go, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite sort of catch-all spices and herbs, and mainly because I grew up on the east and the southeast, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, Virginia, was Old Bay seasoning was kind of a staple in any kitchen. And we used to put it on crab, and you put way too much on crab. That was sort of the way to do it. Mm-hmm. But I really like it on salmon. Like I'll do it, sort of northwesternized the Old Bay thing and put it on salmon, or it's really good. Like I make crackers, you know, out of sourdough starter, and you'll do a little sprinkle on it, not heavy, just light.
Oh, really? Yeah. On crackers.
It's really good. Yum. Yeah.
My very favorite shrimp salad recipe is an Old Bay recipe.
Oh, I gotta check that out.
It is so good. Just look on the web, Old Bay shrimp salad, and it's a classic, and it is so good. You'll never forget it.
Do you need big shrimp or the kind in Oregon, the little baby Oregon?
I suppose you could use the little ones, but not the same as the big ones. We'll do you want to do big ones.
Okay.
Everybody gets six.
The big shrimp.
Everybody gets six big shrimps.
That's right. Don't take any more than six.
Yeah.
I used to have a friend that used to do that. You go over to her house and she goes, each person gets four of those.
And no more. And you snitch any either.
That's not allocation.
So I want to tell people that I found a new tool in the kitchen that I like, and I didn't know I was going to like it. Someone gave me herb cutting scissors.
That's very specific.
Well, I thought, why would anyone give me herb cutting scissors? I mean, can't you just chop your herbs up or tear them up or do whatever you do?
Yeah.
You know? Well, they're like, how would I describe them? It's many blades.
Oh,
it's like
a
thinning
shears.
They're like that, sort of, except there's five blades. And so, you know, I do a lot of Moroccan cooking, and so there's a lot of herbs in there. And if you're doing a whole bunch of parsley or a whole bunch of some big herb, just chop that thing. It's so easy. It's so easy.
Well, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I was pretty happy about that.
Wow.
And you know, I'm not a kitchen gadget person, really.
No.
So I would never have bought that for myself. But as it turns out, I like it very much.
You're probably like I am. You're divesting yourself of things. You go, when's the last time I used this, and getting rid of it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to because it's busy in that kitchen. Yeah. What's yours? What have you found a new tool?
You know,
are you a tool?
I am a tool. That was pretty good.
Thank you.
caught me off guard. Miss Sassy Pants. I did a little splurge. Like, I usually buy stuff at Granny's or garage sales, or I love cast iron pans.
I know you do. You got the goods on Granny's.
I wait for the good stuff.
I know.
And so I have basically cast iron pans, but I really wanted a good stainless steel copper core pan for when I make jam, and I didn't want a preserving pan, which is a different thing.
It's a different thing.
I just wanted
$1,000.
Yeah. So anyway, I bought this all-clad copper core 14-inch giant saute pan that I make jam in because it has an evaporative.
I saw it. I loved it.
It's great.
And the sides are straight.
Yep.
I enjoyed that. I like that.
And I can make jam easier.
Guess what?
Except raspberry.
We're out of time.
What?
Yeah, we are. And we have several subjects that we haven't covered yet.
Oh.
But I just also want to...
And we always worry about things we're going to stop. We worry about running out of things to talk about.
I'm always worried about that. We'll never have enough to say. What are we going to talk about? We need 5 pages of notes. And then all of a sudden, we haven't talked about half of it. But anyway, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really glad you joined us today. And if it's tomorrow and you're doing your dishes, that's good, too.
Yep.
You can listen in the car.
We'll send out the link.
Yeah. And email us at stirringthepot@voiceofvashon.org. And we will see you on the first Tuesday of August.
That's right.
Yeah. We'll be back then. So thank you, everybody.
Au revoir on Bastille Day, my friends.
Bye-bye.